This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on Wednesdays. We say hi to Terry Savage. Watch this. Hi to Terry Savage.
Hello there, John Williams.
How are you?
I'm mixed, like the stock market. I'm mixed. The market's up. We just reported, but I'm mixed about what's going on in Ukraine, and so that's weighing on my mind in a far different than an investment sense.
You know how you always tell us it's a good idea to try and time the market? Well, I was thinking...
I would never say that.
I was thinking that now would be a good time to buy an index fund because every time we have a glimmer of hope, the markets seem to go up. Imagine if we really did have a lasting peace in Ukraine. I'll bet there's another 1,000 points pent up in the market. If I bought now, boy, I'd be looking pretty good when this thing gets resolved.
I'm going to give you a sneak preview of next week's show because I'm pretty sure Dr. Bob's going to join us. And I called him a couple days ago and said, when can we do this? And I said, are you still bullish, you know, when bombs are falling and people are being killed? Oh, yes, Terry. I said, okay, don't tell me anymore. Save it for the show.
Sounds like what I was saying.
Well, first of all, you don't time index funds. Did you get that email I sent you? I posted something at terrysavage.com. Now, one of the things, you know, I think retirees and so forth have to be a little more conservative, careful, have some liquidity and so forth. But consistently I've said, hey, you don't have to beat the market. You'll do fine just being the market. You got that S&P 500 index fund in your 401k plan. Just do it. Keep doing it, that $300, $400 paycheck. New statistics out today. Let's set the stage. This comes from Dow Jones S&P indexes. They track everything. They pointed out the S&P 500 gained 28.7% in 2021. That was a total of 100.4% over the past 3 years. Market doubled. But 79.6% of domestic equity funds, stock market funds, lagged the S&P 500 composite index last year. And in this is amazing, 98.6% of large cap growth funds failed to beat the S&P 500 growth index. The worst, I mean, these are the professional money managers. How long have I been saying, you don't have to beat the market, just be the market, it's cheap, buy an index fund, it's available. You can go to Vanguard or Fidelity or it's in your retirement account. So if you want to participate, you don't have to be a genius. Now, of course, CNBC wouldn't exist if the whole world believed me, but it's worked pretty well over the long run.
How is it that 80% of the domestic equity funds are below the S&P 500, but the S&P 500 was up 29% last year?
No. So watch this. Every mutual fund category has a benchmark. Every portfolio manager, I mean, how do you think a company that hires portfolio managers and spends money on research and portfolio teams and trading teams and so forth, all the mutual funds, each one has a benchmark. If it's a small cap fund, it's a small cap benchmark. Large cap growth, or just S&P 500 index. But the fact is, all these funds were probably up. How could you not be up if you in 2021? I mean, I can't even think of how you could have not gained in 2021 if you were invested in the stock market. However, they spent all this money on research and trading and decisions, and we'll buy this and we'll sell that. We'll get in this. And how about that? 98.6% of large cap growth funds failed to beat the S&P 500 growth index.
Boy, if I'm the boss, I'm mad at somebody.
That's why Vanguard's been gathering assets at an incredible rate, because they are mostly, not all, but mostly index funds.
Well, but it wasn't the truth, too, over the last 2 years that as much as the market went up, it was because of five internet stocks or the stay-at-home stocks. There really wasn't all that much strength in the market per se. It was a handful of companies that were lifting the tide.
That happened recently. I mean, mainly from the market highs last November. But that's not the point here. I'm sure there are some hedge fund managers and so forth and there are some that really failed. You know, the ARK funds, just down 50%. Those were invested, of course, in growth. So I'm not talking about the importance of whether all these fund managers did a great job or didn't do a great job. All they had to be there was to do pretty well last year.
Yeah.
But the point for our audience, our individual investors, is to not, and I've said this forever and ever and ever, you don't have to beat the market, just be the market. Buy the market as long as you could take the risk. When can you not take the risk? When you're in retirement, you're no longer contributing to your 401k. That's a time to lighten up and either have some money set aside, liquidity, money market fund, or something a little more conservative, equity income fund, balanced fund, something like that.
TerrySavage.com is her website, and our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Okay, call or text right now. We'll come back with your questions and comments. Lots of calls and texts for Terry Savage. Before we pick up the phones, Terry, let's talk about the Fed real quick. What's the latest there?
All right, that's going to happen within the hour, actually, at 2 o'clock, at 1 o'clock on the dot when you're getting off the air.
Yeah.
The Fed chairman will be speaking. The Fed will be announcing. Everybody expects a quarter point rate hike. That's not going to be surprising. The next thing they're wondering is the Fed going to signal how many additional rate hikes? He doesn't usually do that, but there's some sense that he could say, well, this could happen another four or five or maybe six times this year. Now, why on earth, in the middle of a war, in the middle of all this uncertainty, would the Fed raise rates, slow the economy, cause problems for itself, etc.? Because this inflation is serious stuff. Nobody remembers too much what it was like in the 80s or late 70s. But now you're seeing it, the gas pump, price of food, price of everything going up. So the lesson learned from the late 70s was act quickly and decisively, raise rates, slow the economy. It'll throw some people out of work. But otherwise, the economy might slow anyway. If you're spending more on gas, you will spend less on entertainment or clothes or shopping or whatever. So it's a very pivotal day here, and we'll hear about that just shortly.
For Terry Savage, says 773, I've got funds at First Nationwide, and I lost about $50,000 to $440,000 in my balance. Various funds. Do I shift to a fixed fund for now until the war and economy turn around? I presume those are paper losses. They're looking at their statement. What about that, Terry?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you own. You obviously own some stock market funds. When you say Nationwide, it could have been inside an annuity-type account where the losses might have been limited. But look, could I make one key point? Everybody used to think stocks are risky, bonds are safe. That is so not true. And if you are equally divided between stocks and bonds, you have leveraged your risk of loss. Well, just think with me. When interest rates rise, bond prices fall. We don't think of bonds having a price. You bought a bond, you're going to get an interest rate. You're going to hold it for 20 years, or your mutual fund will. But mutual funds mark their prices to the daily market. And if a AAA company, if this mutual fund owns bonds from a AAA rated company, they're not going to default, but the long-term interest rate on them is 3%. And if rates start rising, oh, why? Because the Fed says they're going to. If rates start rising and that AAA company or other AAA companies sell more bonds, and these carry an interest rate of 4 or maybe 5 or maybe 6%, the market value of your old bond at 3% goes down, and the market share price of that mutual fund goes down. So when rates go up, bond prices fall, your bond fund loses money, your net asset value will go down, and when rates go up, it could be bad for the stock market. Stocks beat inflation over the long run, but higher interest rates are a cost to businesses, etc., so that could impact profits. So you could lose money in stocks and bonds. Please don't think you're diversified if you own stocks and bonds. So this listener or texter said, well, could I switch to something like bonds? Don't do that. That's no place to hide. The only place to hide is cash. And I say it every week. It's a terrible place to hide now because you know the rates are so low. But at least your money's going away slowly, not overnight.
Really? So you think just put it in the bank for now if you want to pull some out and save it?
Well, I believe in America over the long run. I'm going to be thrilled if Dr. Bob comes back and reiterates his Dow 40,000 forecast. But the point is, for many people, the long run isn't an option. If you're going to have to take money out for an RMD, minimum distribution,
yeah,
or you need it to live on, or if just seeing the bottom line go down like that, where did 50,000 go? If that's going to give you a heart attack, you need to give yourself some sleeping room, and the only sleeping room is cash.
For Terry Savage, I turned 65 in June and I'm on Social Security. My wife is 60 and still working. Should I sign up for Medicare Part B or just let her insurance cover those costs?
If you're insured on your wife, you might as well be insured under her employment, and she should try and work till her full retirement age. But there's no reason for you to sign up for Medicare Part B, because then you need a supplement as long as her plan covers you.
Fair enough. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines, too. We'll start with Karen. You're on with Terry Savage. Hi, Karen. How can we help?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Terry, my question is, I filed my taxes electronically on January 31st, and it had an option in that I checked that the recovery rebate, but then afterwards I received a letter saying that I did receive all three. So I don't know if I should just amend my taxes, because every time I check, it says they received it, but it's still being processed.
I have a question for you. Did you check your direct deposit, your bank account? Did you go back and go, oh, yeah, there was that extra $1,400? Do you think you got it?
I believe I did, yes.
Okay. Well, this is six of one, half a dozen of the other. I got off the phone with our buddy from the IRS, Eric Smith, who said he'll come on early in April, and I was asking him about that. You know, the minute you file an amended return, your return is going to go into a pile that's going to be waiting and waiting and waiting. He sent me an update. They're still way behind, maybe not 11 million returns behind. So I would let them find that error and wait to see what they do. It's just an honest error. And if you were going to get a refund, they will probably subtract so that you won't get a refund because of that if you claimed it for a refund. I think this is tough to give advice, but I would not file an amended return that's just asking for trouble. They'll find it. Believe me, they know if you make a mistake.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Karen, good luck to you. I appreciate your call. This is Danny. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Danny, what's your question?
Yes. Hi. I received this letter from PayPal. It's a 1099-K, and it's under my sister's name, but she passed away. And the form is all filled out. They even got her her SSI on here. It's a 2021. And they got payment that started in July. So I'm asking if you have any recommendations what I should do with this.
I'm going to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Whose Social Security number, Danny, is on that form?
My sister's. Her last four digits are.
Okay, her last four digits.
Yes.
And did you file an estate, a tax return for her estate, or it was so little that you weren't required to file a tax return?
No, it was. This happened 4 years ago, and I have power of attorney, and I took care of all her bills and that. And when I file, I don't make much. And when I file, I just filed, and then I received this January.
Okay, I understand that, but did your sister have, quote, an estate that required you to file an income tax return?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So she's deceased. You, despite you have the power of attorney to help her manage her money, have no tax obligation. You're going to eventually get a letter from the IRS saying, what? And you need a copy of the death certificate. And you say she was deceased. She was deceased in 2021?
Yeah.
Okay.
The 4 years ago. This is January of 2018.
Oh, 4 years ago. Okay. You just hang on to that, and if you hear a further letter from the IRS, just get a copy of the death certificate, mail it back, registered mail, return receipt requested, and say, this person is deceased, give the date, and no next of kin. That's all you have to do. You're not obligated.
Danny, good luck to you, and thanks for the call, and good more advice from Terry Savage. Can I just click through some questions from
sure.
our listeners?
Let's do it.
Hey, John Williams, only took 1 year to get my refund today from the IRS, $6.08 plus interest.
Wait, the $6.08 was the refund, not the interest?
Oh, wait, I read it wrong. From the IRS plus $6.08 of interest.
Well, don't spend it all in one place.
847, I still have not received my 2020 refund. Will I be able to file for 2021 on TurboTax? I tried calling the IRS, just got an automated answering system.
Okay, I spent about 20 minutes or more even with the IRS yesterday. Look, they are behind. I got an email this morning saying, well, as of March 4th, we had 7.1 million unprocessed individual returns, including some prior returns with errors, blah, 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 blah. And the commissioner is going to testify before the House Ways and Means Oversight Committee tomorrow. Maybe he'll give a further update. Here's what happens. If you want to file with TurboTax, you have to put in, as a way of identifying yourself, last year's adjusted gross income. But if they haven't received it, here's what you can do. You can either file with zero for last year's adjusted gross income. They may have gotten your return. They may have cashed your check if you send it, but they may not have processed your return. So you can try putting in zero. Alternately, you can try and put in 2019's adjusted gross income and see if you can get in that way. I have a question into TurboTax if there's any other kind of way they can identify people, because so many people are having this problem, and I'll report back when I hear from them.
312. Hey, Terry, my wife and I are both retired. We recently sold some real estate with enough money to pay off my current mortgage of $200,000. Do you suggest I pay off the mortgage or invest $200,000?
Whoa, that's such a blind question. Look, if you're in that position, this is when you need a financial advisor. I say this all the time on my website. I've never really described this service on our show, but there's a company called WealthRamp.com, WealthRamp.com. If you look at TerrySavage.com, you know I get paid nothing for endorsing anything. But this was created by my co-podcaster, Pam Kruger. It's like Match.com for fee-only fiduciary financial advisors. She vets all the advisors that are allowed to be on her service and matches you up with one or two or three. You can talk to them. You're at a stage where you have big decisions to make about your retirement lifestyle, what other assets you have. You don't want to talk to someone who's trying to sell you something. That's probably why you asked me the question. I sell nothing. Go to WealthRamp.com. Fill out the thing. It costs you nothing. Costs you nothing to get matched up with an advisor, and just maybe have a session or two that's just a fee to look at what's the best move for you given your lifestyle, your age, your retirement goals, the rest of your assets. I can't do that in a minute.
But hanging over that question is the point that you're going to get 3% if you keep paying your mortgage. You're probably going to make more than that in the markets. So it's
you want to bet that? You want to bet that whole $200,000 on
their
that?
Money? I'm comfortable with that, but no, I take your point. But I mean, okay. I said hanging over that. I think that's what's tempting about this. Nobody wants to make a mortgage payment, but maybe that's the stupid thing to do because I can get 5% in the markets.
You know, I had that debate with Larry Kotlikoff, who wrote that wonderful book on Get What's Yours on Social Security and the new book that we just talked about recently. He says pay off your mortgage. I've always suggested that you pay off your mortgage before you retire. That's been a thing forever. But right now, if you can lock in, if you have already locked in, let's say, a 3.25% mortgage with inflation going at 7.9%, you're repaying that mortgage with cheaper dollars. And we've had 13 years where the S&P 500 average return was about 17% with dividends reinvested. But for the past 100 years before that, the average return was 10%. If you believe we're going to go back to averages, we could have some years ahead with underperforming returns. So this is not an easy question, and it's not answered just by, well, I could deduct the interest and it's 3% and the money's cheap because inflation's 7.9 versus the stock market, you always win. That's not all, you know, not guaranteed for the next 5 years either. So you need to do this decision in the context of where are you in your life? What other assets do you have?
And not,
what other investments?
And not based on the musings of a talk show host who has no vested interest in your financial well-being. You know, I think another way to answer that, and thank you for asking, is this. If the difference is the cost of a good night's sleep, then pay off the mortgage. If you would feel better not having a mortgage, and who wouldn't? Yeah, maybe you could make more in the markets, but that's the price you pay for not having a mortgage. And doesn't that feel good? So don't beat yourself up if you go that route. You haven't lost anything necessarily. How about
that? But that's not
true.
You can't do that. That's why you're not a registered investment advisor. And
I thought I just said that very well.
You did say it very well, but what we're missing here is that's like, do you want chocolate frosting on your cake or vanilla frosting on your cake? The question is, should you be eating that cake now? Is that good for your diet? So please, this person who has that kind of money has a 401k or an IRA rollover, has plans for retirement. This is why you just don't make these decisions with those two factors. There's a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to say, what was that website?
WealthRamp.com.
Yeah. And you can, and you'll see the explanation of it. Go to TerrySavage.com. The top right-hand corner, there are four boxes, my financial inventory form, my organizer, and there's one, how to find a fiduciary financial advisor. Again, I get nothing out of this. I know a bunch of them in Chicago that have qualified to be on this, and I respect every single one of them, so I'm sure you can't go wrong.
WealthRamp.com from TerrySavage.com. Okay, Terry, really good information today. We always appreciate talking to you.
Love being with you, John. Next week, let's try and get Dr. Bob. Remember, he said 40,000. I called him in the midst of the decline. He said, oh, yeah, Terry, 40,000 easy. Let's see what he says next week.
That's a good plan. That's Terry Savage. She'll be here next Wednesday. It's 12:44 on the Wintrust Business Lunch with more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Choose Chicago, the city's tourism arm, has hired Chicago Architecture Center president and CEO Lynn Osmond as its new chief executive. She'll take over on May 9th, according to an announcement from Mayor Lightfoot. The mayor says Osmond's intimate knowledge of the city will be a great asset to Choose Chicago. She'll replace former Choose Chicago CEO David Whitaker, whose contract expired last year. Osmond spent 25 years leading the nonprofit Chicago Architecture Center. Billionaire businessman Ken Griffin and the Cubs-owning Ricketts family are teaming up in an effort to buy English soccer's Chelsea Football Club. Sky News was first to report the bid. The club is being sold by Roman Abramovich, a Russian oligarch and supporter of Vladimir Putin, who's been sanctioned by the United Kingdom and other countries in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Griffin, the founder of Citadel, is also bankrolling a Republican candidate for Illinois governor. He's worth more than $30 billion. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, and now with the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, you know, John, just as we've seen the work-from-home stock market darlings like Peloton and Zoom and even Netflix give back some or all of their pandemic gains, meal kit delivery companies are finding themselves in that same gravy boat.
The whole category had a massive wind assist in the spring of 2020 as all of us were stuck at home wondering pretty much on a daily basis, what's for dinner?
Washington Post food reporter Laura Riley is back with us today to talk about companies like HelloFresh and Blue Apron and over 100 other companies competing for your meal kit dollars.
A lot of them had struggled in the years running up to the pandemic, but 2020 saw huge boom times for the whole category. And as the world has opened back up and restaurants have come back online and just there's more competition from other avenues.
Yeah, even grocery stores saw what was going on, said, yeah, we can do that, and started making their own meal kits.
Kroger and a lot of the big Walmart, a lot of these big grocery brands have either bought a service that they are now offering or they've developed one in-house.
And another thing doing in the meal kit businesses, themselves. You know the old saying, give a person a fish versus teaching a person how to fish?
Yeah. I mean, I think that in a way, maybe they have built in their own obsolescence, you know, that, you make it like a Lego kit for somebody, you know, like, okay, put this next to this. This is step one. Here's step two. And pretty soon people are like, oh, I got this. I got the hang of this. So I talked to a lot of people who had been very avid users of meal kits early in the pandemic, and it taught them some basic skills. And maybe I don't need to pay for a service that's going to send this stuff to me or give me a laminated card and explaining how to do it.
And a beneficial bonus from the meal kits.
So it does feel like, as a country, there's more cooking competency than there was 2 years ago.
Laura Riley, a business of food writer for The Washington Post. From the farm to your belly, today is National Artichoke Heart Day. Nearly all of ours come from the central coast of California, Monterey County. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
So it is Women's History Month. Rebecca Ryan joins us. She's an economist, a futurist, and a workforce expert. Rebecca, thanks for joining us on WGN.
Good to be back with you, John.
So talk to me a little bit about what you see for women in the workplace in the future.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I think we have been reporting widely is that a lot of women left the workforce during COVID, you know, forced to choose between keeping their job or helping their kids with online learning. They chose their kids, right? And it's hard to disagree with that as their priority. But now they're not coming back into the workforce. So right now, the women's labor force participation rate is the lowest it's been since 1988. So we, looking forward, we've got some ground to make up because women contribute a lot to this economy.
Does the market, would the market embrace them if they were to come back? That is, if they've decided not to come back, does the workforce necessarily need women? The workforce would take them were they to come back, right?
Yeah, I think that that's true. But I think what's also true is that the zeitgeist has changed.
Yeah.
So for many Americans, work is no longer the most important thing that they do. It's maybe fallen behind their health or the health of their family or their connections with their loved ones. And for women, that's kind of a double barrel, because not only maybe have their priorities changed, but the demands on them have changed. So we all know that women do a lot of the emotional labor in their households and a lot of the childcare and elder care. So as those demands have gone up and we've restructured our priorities, women's interest in coming back into the labor force in the same way as before COVID is different. So we're dealing with a new normal here.
And by the way, I just want to say that I think any lack of diversity in the marketplace or the workplace is bad. And if that's even a male-female lack of diversity, I don't want to go to a place where it's a bunch of guys. What do we need to do then to accommodate women or all of us that want to come back to the workplace?
Well, I want to actually tip my hat to you, John, because I think it's important for men to be in this discussion. And I'm putting my hand on my heart. It meant a lot to hear you say you care about this as well. And I think our sons care about this as well as our daughters.
Yeah.
So when, every choice we make today has a long-term effect. So business people are extremely pragmatic. And I would ask business people, are the policies and norms in your office friendly to women? And if one of the norms in your workplace is 8 to 5 every day, no exceptions, no flexibility, it's not friendly to women. Or I would even say working parents, because I think, young men are shouldering a load. There are many single family households that are headed by men. So we want to be inclusive of all.
I'd like to see more paid family leave or ways to accommodate the workforce that's taking care of their adults or taking care of their children. Find some way to keep people on the payroll, and let's not make them count that as a vacation day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. A lot of people are going to just pools of paid time off that you can use as is needed without, having to have sign off on whether it's a good reason or a bad reason. One of the things I am going to encourage your listeners, especially because you've got a business audience, but again, we're pragmatic. We know that the decisions we make today will shape the future. And I think about what we've learned in the accessibility community. So as an example, think about a building, right? If you build a building where the ramp is the primary way to access the building, everyone can use the ramp. People in chairs and people, who can walk with their legs and who don't need chairs, right? But very often we build our buildings with stairs and then we think secondarily, okay, now where do we put the ramp? We can have a similar approach to how we rebuild our workplace cultures and our workplaces. If we would think, all right, how can we build our norms and our policies and procedures around women and women of color who are often the most marginalized by norms at work? If we built for them, everybody could benefit, right? Everybody could benefit, and it doesn't have to be an afterthought.
I'm remembering what Paul Wellstone said. When we all do better, we all do better. And it's so, so true. Rebecca Ryan is an economist and a futurist. You should click on RebeccaRyan.com, RebeccaRyan.com. Join us again, Rebecca. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, John.